wanted a chance to make law. Well, here it is. Make it a good one.
Is this your gun?
No.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
We have your name on the registration.
No, you don't.
Don't be ridiculous. Networks don't get to decide elections. Courts do.
Your Honors, I'm not some slick big city lawyer like my opponent here.
What just happened? You kind of confessed. Sorry.
And I find you guilty. Bring out the wheel of punishment!
Welcome to Opening Arguments, a podcast that pairs a comedian with a real-life lawyer. This podcast is sponsored by the law offices of P. Andrew Torres, LLC for entertainment purposes, is not intended as legal advice, and does not form an attorney-client relationship. Don't take legal advice from a podcast.
Hello and welcome to Opening Arguments. This is episode 453. I'm Thomas. That's Andrew. How you doing, Andrew?
I'm fantastic, Thomas. How are you? Happy New Year again.
Yeah. We're recording this ahead of time, so we can't say for sure if it actually is the new year. I can't believe that's the world we live in, but I'm actually not sure. I'm agnostic. But assuming it all went to plan, welcome to 2021, everybody.
Woo!
It's a new
I'll be writing 1985 on all my checks, so...
In this new year, we've got a great episode for you. We've got a fantastic return to true OA form with a deep dive, legal deep dive. Can't wait. We're also going to talk about a few election-y things because guess what? It's over, beast. Still over. Trump still lost. It's nice. You know, it has been nice to have him lose so many times. It helps a little bit. Take the sting off it a little bit. So, yeah, I don't even think we have any announcements.
No, let's just get into it.
Let's get into it.
Joe Biden will become the 46th president of the United States.
This election is not over.
It's over, beast!
This is a major fraud in our nation.
If you count the legal votes, I easily win.
You lose!
It's over, beast!
So, Andrew, we're closing in on the Georgia special election. We're so close. What can we expect?
Yeah, well, while people are listening to it, that will be taking place today, right? So here's the thing that I want you to understand. Everybody has said, when we talked to the Warnock campaign, to the Ossoff campaign in connection with the fantastic fundraisers you guys made happen, Jameel Favors said, we don't expect to have results Tuesday night, right? It would be great, right? But it would be beyond our wildest dreams if Ossoff and Warnock have leads, you know, of 3-5% that, you know, without the bulk of the votes coming in from Atlanta tonight. That is not very likely, right? The polling shows all of this within a margin of error. I think there are a lot of good reasons to think that things are trending in the right direction. So I just want to say, you know, just like we said over the presidential election, be patient. We're down to the home stretch here. And I know that a lot rides on these races. We feel like we pulled out all the stops. But, you know, if you don't have results, that doesn't mean that the good guys have lost. So I wanted to flag that. And then I wanted to talk about an unbelievably stupid thing that's happening today.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, I'm just so nervous about this whole thing, Andrew. I haven't wanted, you know, I want to hope, but I'm not looking at a poll. I'm never looking at any polls for this Georgia election. And I've stuck to that. My old year's resolution was don't look at polls. My new year's resolution will be don't look at polls on this thing. And I just want so badly for Warnock and Ossoff to win that I don't know what to say. I'm just hoping so much. And we're going to know somewhat soon, you know, and if we're soon here and I'm just going to have several heart attacks from now until then. So I don't have anything to add.
All of those are very, very healthy responses. How about I say I agree with you on that?
At least we've done so much and our dear listeners have done so much to try to make this happen.
It is. I mean, I am just blown away. I don't know if we ever announced. They don't actually shut down our Act Blue link.
Yeah, maybe it'll get to a million. Who knows? It's still open.
As of this record, we've raised $86,485. That is, and I say we, I truly mean, like, you know, you and I coordinated and made some phone calls and, you know, brought in some of our friends. Our listeners made that happen. Tom and Cecil had the first go round, and they made almost $140,000 happen. I mean, that is just, we're a bunch of atheist podcasters, man. Like to be in that space and to have materially made a difference on a level that, you know, your local, you know, you typically think about, like, you know, big money handlers bundling together, you know, $50 or $100,000 in donations. We blew through that, and I'm still kind of blown away by that and how awesome our listeners are. So fingers crossed. It's all turnout. It's all everything. And we just don't know. We're not going to know. And it's okay. Have some mental internal peace until we do know.
Okay. Sure.
I'm trying, buddy.
Easy.
I'm doing my
best.
I'll
just do that. I'll have mental internal peace.
Well, how about something where we can laugh at idiots?
Okay.
Will that make you happy?
That will help a little bit.
Okay. So today, the Senate's own Corey, Missouri Senator Josh Hawley, who I believe is 40 years old, looks 27 and acts 12.
Let's not forget that they actually have Cory Booker. So, you know.
I don't.
It's a good Corey.
Yeah. Josh Hawley. Oh, Josh is enough, right? There shouldn't be any Joshes on the federal bench either. Again, lurched hard into Trump's arms, a la like the, you know, King of the World scene from Titanic.
Metaphor, because
they all went down on a ship and died. So this is somebody who then got himself on the Supreme Court shortlist. So, you know, when it comes to jumping up at the back of the class and waving your arm around and going, "Ooh, Donald, 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 pick me." Josh Hawley has managed to do that. He is going to engage in a stunt today as you're listening to the show. It is a complete stunt. It is going absolutely nowhere. I'm going to explain all the myriad ways why it is going nowhere. I'm going to tell you why it is not, right? Fox News has already been priming the airwaves with, well, you know, the Democrats did this in 2004 and nobody cared. And no, they didn't. I'm going to tell you why that's a big fat lie. But this is not going to be a last ditch Hail Mary to unsuit the president. Yeah, go ahead.
someone you know, AG, was tweeting to this effect that this happened in 2016 and it didn't matter. So I was curious to ask you about that. I mean, on what level is there a sense in which, because, you know, when I saw that Josh was going to do this, I thought, okay, well, this is horrible. This is treasonous, whatever. But, you know, if it is true that some Democrats did this in 2016 and we didn't even hear about it, then maybe that would put a different spin on it. And maybe the media is making too much of this.
I love that you phrased the question that way. And let me talk about the applicable law, right? So this is all part of the Presidential Election Act, right? And these have been around in various forms since the founding of the Republic. This particular provision, 3 USC 15, was initially passed in 1877 and amended in 1948. Not super duper clear. but here's essentially what these provisions, right? The first couple of sections of Chapter 3 of the U.S. Code are meant to implement the provisions of the Constitution, right? And particularly with respect to presidential elections. And so this says, Section 15 is about how we go about counting the electoral votes in Congress. And here's the procedure, okay? So, Congress shall be in session on the sixth day of January succeeding every meeting of the electors. So, that'll be January 6th. The Senate and House of Representatives shall meet in the hall of the House of Representatives at the hour of 1 o'clock in the afternoon on that day. I just love the, you know, old timiness in this law. And the president of the Senate, that is Vice President Mike Pence, shall be their presiding officer. Two tellers shall be previously appointed on the part of the Senate and two on the part of the House of Representatives, to whom shall be handed, as opened by the president of the Senate, all of the certificates and papers purporting to be certificates of the electoral votes, which certificates and papers shall be opened, presented, and acted upon in the alphabetical order of the states, beginning with the letter A. It actually says
thank you for, okay, good, okay. I learned something here today, all right.
And said tellers, having then read the same in the presence and hearing of the two houses, shall make a list of the votes as they shall appear from the said certificates. And the votes, having been ascertained and counted according to the rules in this subchapter provided, the results of the same shall be delivered to the president of the Senate, who shall thereupon announce the state of the vote, which announcement shall be deemed a sufficient declaration of the persons, if any, elected president and vice president of the United States.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, totally straightforward, right? Pence comes in. There's a little bit of this pomp and circumstance. You got these two tellers from the Senate, two tellers from the House.
Yeah.
They read it out in alphabetical order. And Mike Pence says, I certify that Alabama casts its 10 electoral votes for Donald Trump. And you know, it goes through in order. The next section, and this is all one big paragraph, one huge wall of text. The next paragraph says, upon such reading of any such certificate or paper, the president of the Senate shall call for objections, if any. Every objection shall be made in writing and shall state clearly and concisely and without argument the ground thereof, and shall be signed by at least one senator and one member of the House of Representatives before the same shall be received. That's the thing that Josh Hawley is doing. He is going to file objection or objections to various totals of electoral votes as they are read.
Hero. Okay. Truly a hero.
Truly a hero. Then what happens, right? So Senator Josh Hawley is teaming up with, you know, one of the howler monkeys from the QAnon caucus from the House of Representatives, right? Like, it's not hard to find somebody in the House of Representatives to do this. It was a challenge finding somebody in the Senate willing to do this. What happens when there's an objection? Well, the paragraph continues. When all objections so made to any vote or paper from a state shall have been received and read, the Senate shall thereupon withdraw, and such objection shall be submitted to the Senate for its decision. And the Speaker of the House of Representatives shall, in like manner, submit such objections to the House of Representatives for its decision, and no electoral vote or votes from any state which shall have been regularly given by electors whose appointment has been lawfully certified, according to Section 6 of this title, right? That's the Safe Harbor Act. We've talked about that before. From which but one return has been received shall be rejected. But the two houses concurrently may reject the voter votes when they agree that such voter votes have not been so regularly given by electors whose appointment has been so certified, if more than one return or paper purporting to be a return from a state shall have been received by the president of the Senate, those votes and those only shall be counted which shall have been regularly given by the electors who are shown by the determination mentioned previously in this section. Okay.
So I know you're presenting this as like, look at this thing, a dummy is doing this, not going to work. But does this sound like if Republicans controlled the House, this could be some BS way they could steal an election?
No.
Okay.
They would have to do a couple of things. Number one, they would have to control the House. Number two, they would have to be in the state in which they are now, which is completely willing to jettison democracy.
Okay. Check.
Yeah, get check. And number three, and this is really the most important thing, the fact that the law says this as a way of implementing the Constitution does not prove that this mechanism is itself constitutional. And in fact, it is very, very clear to me that if you were to pull shenanigans, right? If you were to say, okay, we're not going to be able to certify these votes because of error, like that's what both the Senate and the House have said. And so, you know, we're going to come back and we're going to do something else, even though it doesn't meet the plain criteria of the statute, right? Like, even though there were no alternate. Remember when everyone was concerned about that, how states were going to submit alternate slates and Pennsylvania's Republican legislator was going to give an alternate list of electors. That's what this provision is for, right?
Yeah.
This provision is for when the Senate has two people show up and go, those aren't the electoral votes. These are the electoral votes.
Yeah. And they're both clones and the Senate has to decide which one to shoot.
Right. Yeah. And obviously, you know, you pick the one that says shoot me, right? That you say, oh, okay, I'm going to shoot the other one. Uh-huh. But no, like this is meant to have resolved the controversy. Right. Remember, I told you that the first version of this was passed in 1877. Well, 1876, right, was the Tilden Rutherford B. Hayes race. Right. And there were multiple slates of electors. And the verdict of history is probably that Hayes stole that election from Tilden. Okay.
Wow.
And so this was designed to say, all right, we're going to streamline that procedure. If there are multiple slates of electors that are out there, we adjourn and the House and the Senate gets to pick which one is the real one and which one was written on a cocktail napkin, right? Now, nobody has lined up, right? Like prominent Republicans have said, this is nonsense. We're not going to sign on to, you know, decertifying any results on any electors in the House. But even if they did, right, to take away the results of a lawful election by statute, because it says Congress will do that, like, I feel confident, and I want to say this, like, I feel confident that even this Supreme Court would look at this statute and go, no, that is not a constitutional exercise of the powers of Congress, and we're going to strike down that provision of this law that enables them to throw out electoral votes. Because effectively what that says is Congress can orchestrate who the next president is, right? Like that if that were to happen, then you would not need to control both the White House and both houses of Congress. You would only need to control both houses of Congress, right? So imagine that they do that, right? You would then have in 2024 a Democratic Senate and a Democratic House of Representatives, regardless of whether Mike Pence is still vice president and still, ostensibly president of the Senate. He reads the votes. They file the objections. Congress adjourns. They come back and go, guess what? We've thrown out all the Republican votes. It can't – whenever there's something where you're like, it can't possibly work that way, you're probably correct in thinking it won't work that way.
Hmm.
Now, what about the 2004 that we talked about? I'm going to provide a link to a story from January 6th, 2005 on CNN. What happened in 2004 was that there was very public criticism of the use and contracts being given out to voting machines, particularly in the state of Ohio. Doesn't do me any good to say this as cred now, but I think OA listeners will find this plausible. I was never a big believer in those criticisms. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Wrote a piece for Rolling Stone magazine. He wrote that piece in 2006. But it was the part of kind of a long simmering sort of years worth of investigative journalism and reporting, arguing that the 2004 election was stolen in Ohio. His conclusion was, quote, after carefully examining the evidence, I've become convinced that the president's party, meaning George W. Bush, the Republican Party, mounted a massive coordinated campaign to subvert the will of the people in 2004. Okay, so pretty strong claims. I did not subscribe. I did not find those claims compelling back then.
Well, also RFK Jr. is an anti-vax conspiracy theorist, so perhaps he's a little conspiracy theory minded. and that spilled over into this.
Perhaps. I want to say that article, you can go read that article. It is orders of magnitude more credible than anything Sidney Powell has ever said.
Yeah, that's not
right. It's not the rantings of a crazy person who's spread feces on the wall, right? It's just the rantings of a person who was conspiracy minded, drawing connections that I think lacked sufficient evidence. But in any event, what was orchestrated in 2005, and again, I'm going to read directly, Google this yourself, I'm going to read directly from the CNN article. I'm going to cite to you for proof for your Uncle Frank, the archives.gov page of the 2004 Electoral College results, which show that both houses voted to override the objection that was lodged. Right, it was an objection filed by Representative Stephanie Tubbs Jones from Ohio and Senator Barbara Boxer from your state, that was designed to draw attention to voting machines. They were overruled 74-1 in the Senate and 267-31 in the House of Representatives. The objections were not designed to overturn the result of the election, right? Quote, "The move was not designed to overturn the re-election of President Bush," said Ohio Representative Stephanie Tubbs Jones and California Senator Barbara Boxer, who, again, you know, you may remember as not exactly a bomb thrower, right, who filed the objection. The objecting Democrats, most of whom are House members, said they wanted to draw attention to the need for aggressive election reform in the wake of what they said were widespread voter problems. Members of the group said there were numerous particularly serious election regularities in Ohio that led to a significant disenfranchisement of voters. Okay, so I wanted to introduce all of that because this is making the rounds in right-wing media. This vote in 2004 is probably not something I would have supported had I been in the legislature, but it was very clearly, I read you the words of the people who filed those objections, right? It was not designed to overturn Ohio's electoral votes. They knew it was going to lose. They did it to draw attention. And, you know, you could argue how effective they were at drawing attention to those issues, but nobody was trying to overturn the election. You contrast that with what Hawley is doing. Donald Trump is holding a rally today as Josh Hawley is about to pull the stunt, right? Republicans who support this honestly want to overturn the electoral results in four states and make Donald Trump president. That's the difference. And do not let anybody sell you a false equivalence of that anybody has ever tried this before or will ever try this again. This is absolutely unprecedented. And the happy news is it's not going to happen. It's going nowhere. There are multiple levels of protection. Are there less protections than I would like? Probably, but it's not going anywhere. You're going to be fine. You're going to see this all in the news today, and we will have covered this. We are so confident about this that we're recording it in advance. Oh.
So in other words, what I think you're saying is, it's over, beast!
Exactly. Couldn't put it better myself.
Noted. Down. 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 All right, Andrew, I was promised a signature OA deep dive, return to pre-2017 OA. What are we talking about today in our deep dive?
I thought this was a perfect opportunity to talk about a letter dated December 22nd that made the rounds last week, particularly in left-wing circles, cheering for the law firm of Clare Locke, LLP, which represents U.S. Dominion Inc., right? Dominion, the company that is the parent company to Dominion Voting Systems, Inc., Dominion Voting Systems Corporation, right? Like, they're the guys that run the machines that you've heard so much about. This letter is called a litigation hold letter. And as I read the first paragraph, you'll see why lots of liberals were kind of standing up and clapping. And I'm going to tell you why I think this is wrong. It begins, "Dear Ms. Carone," and now this is Melissa Carone, as we alluded to last week's episode. This is Drunky McDrunkerson from Rudy Giuliani's, cavalcade of, it's kind of like the Magical Mystery Tour, only without any magic or mystery. But so she was the one who testified rather intoxicatedly that, well, you don't know that they don't have proof of all the voter fraud. Why? Oh, yeah, I bet you did that along with them. And, you know, it caused an Arizona Republican to say, ma'am, I am a Republican who voted for Donald Trump. But so Dominion has now sent the following letter to Ms. Caron. Quote, "You gained international infamy earlier this month as Rudy Giuliani's so-called star witness who could supposedly corroborate outlandish accusations that Dominion has somehow rigged or otherwise improperly influenced the outcome of the November 2020 U.S. presidential election. Without a shred of corresponding evidence, you claim that you witnessed several different versions of voter fraud, ranging from one story involving a van to other accusations that votes were counted multiple times. You published those statements even though you knew all along that your attacks on Dominion have no basis in reality. Last week, we sent letters to Sidney Powell and various media entities demanding retraction of their myriad false and conspiratorial claims about Dominion. We write to you now because you have positioned yourself as a prominent leader of the ongoing misinformation campaign by pretending to have some sort of insider knowledge regarding Dominion's business activities, when in reality you were hired through a staffing agency for one day to clean glass on machines and complete other menial tasks. Based on these facts, Dominion formally demands that you, one, cease and desist making defamatory claims against Dominion, and two, preserve and retain all documents related to Dominion and your smear campaign against the company." Okay, so funny stuff, and I laughed too. But here's what a litigation hold letter is for. I file these as we anticipate litigation against other companies. And the reason you do so is because companies have a typical document retention and destruction policy, right? So employee emails, for example, are kept for a time and then scrubbed off the server to save space. And then if there's, you know, a backup created, you know, those backups are kept for a period of time and then the backups are deleted. It's the same thing with documents, right? There are some documents that you are required to maintain for long periods of time, but otherwise, right? The reason there's a shredding industry is that, you know, not
because of Yngwie Malmsteen. That's the reason there's a shredding industry.
That's such an A-plus reference. Love Yngwie. Anyway, you're allowed to destroy your papers that you create. And so out of that practice was born the litigation hold letter. And a litigation hold letter is a way of telling a company, hey, we're about to sue you, or we're considering suing you, and you may have documents that are relevant to the matters for which we're about to sue you, or we're considering suing you. And now if you destroy them, now that you're on notice about that, that would be spoliation, right? That would be a crime. It would materially adversely impact the litigation. So you have a duty to suspend your normal document destruction and retention policies and preserve anything that might be relevant to this dispute. And then the letter will set out what that dispute is, right? And say, you must preserve the following categories of documents. You might notice that I began this conversation in talking about what corporations do. And that's because I would say it is irregular. I don't want to say it never happens, but it is very irregular to send a litigation hold letter to a person.
To a drunkard? Oh, yeah, to a person. Yeah, to a, right. Yeah, because it's not like she has a document retention policy. I mean, I know. I bet Andrew does just because, you know, Andrew's all about documents.
Well, it's his fetish. Yeah, of course.
She probably has a very neat and tidy system. But for me, I don't really have any sort of retention or destruction policy. And so it's kind of weird to send this to a person.
Yeah, it is. And it's particularly weird because you can see juxtaposed in this letter their standard language. So for example, I'm going to go to page 2, right? And this language is 100% appropriate. I've written language like this in a half dozen cases to civil defendants that my clients were about to sue, right? "Due to its format, electronic information is easily deleted, modified, or corrupted. Accordingly, you must take every reasonable step to preserve this information until this matter is resolved. This may include, but would not be limited to, an obligation to discontinue all data destruction and backup recycling policies and procedures on any and all devices within your possession, custody, or control.
Huh.
Your obligation to preserve documents applies to both you individually and any entities that you control. So, Trucky McDrunkerson here does not control any entities. She does not have data retention or backup recycling policies, right? And you have no grounds as a lawyer to say, oh, we think you're the kind of person that would destroy documents, right? That's – even if you think she's the kind of person that might destroy documents.
Let's play Dominion's advocate here. If there's – so wait, what even is the litigation, like a – you know, for libel or something or slander or what?
Excellent question. It is a defamation lawsuit, right,
okay,
against Sidney Powell, against Rudy Giuliani for running around and saying, you know, Dominion engaged in a secret conspiracy with Skittle to, you know, hack the votes to
Okay, so let's say Dominion's advocate, let's say they're thinking maybe there's texts and emails among these conspirators to do this really dumb thing. We're putting you on notice that you can't delete those, and it would be, you know, you'd be violating the law or whatever you want to say. So is that, you don't find that valid? Is that not something that's normally done to an individual?
So not only is that not typically done to an individual, it is not typically done to a party's witness, right?
Hmm.
Remember that this is not the person who has spearheaded and coordinated these efforts, right? This is somebody who cooperated with Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell. And I take seriously, right? Like you did a good job as Dominion's advocate. If I represented Dominion, I think it is beyond appropriate to send a letter like this to Giuliani and to Powell, which they have done, and to demand retractions for the reasons we've talked about on the show.
And
right?
Please, like, once get them disbarred. Can they help with that? Can they do anything about that?
I think we could see disciplinary action.
Just nothing you can do short of stealing retainer money gets you disbarred. What a pointless association.
I don't disagree. I mean, let's get you
unless you're listening.
The bar
then I like you. Only the people listening, though.
Yeah. I think that this is illustrating kind of a contemporary that, you know, that we need to revisit for, you know, the Larry Klamans and Sidney Powells of the world who are out there enabling baseless conspiracy theories that are, you know, contrary to justice and clog up the courts and all that. I agree with that 100%. And I think that, you know, there probably is some energy to, you know, revisit and buff up those standards. So I agree with you. I do. And you point out, by the way in which a court would very likely adjudicate any sort of spoliation claims, right? Which is, you tell Rudy Giuliani, don't delete stuff off your hard drive and produce all the documents. And then that covers the emails that Rudy Giuliani has sent to Drunky McDrunkerson here. I've even forgotten her name. It's Melissa Carone. Because Melissa Carone is going to be a material witness, you can require her to show up and sit for a deposition and to bring documents with her. That is a subpoena deuces tecum, right? So even if you haven't sued her directly, and they have not, and they do not indicate that they're going to, well, they say that litigation is imminent.
Yeah.
Litigation regarding these issues is imminent. It does not say we're going to sue you personally for defamation, and they probably won't, but I could be wrong on that. You can say, first set of requests for production of documents directed to Ms. Carone, you can say, I want you to bring all of your emails that are between you and Rudy Giuliani. And if you claim that they are protected by attorney-client privilege, you have to produce a privilege log, right, that identifies each and every one of them, the subject matter, the recipients, the date, and I have successfully litigated on issues where people have overly broad claims of privilege, right? And you, the first step is, I wish I could say taint team, but the first step is an in-camera inspection by the judge of the materials, right? So the judge will say, hey, you've listed the plaintiff's counsel has contested the privilege designation for documents 35, 79, and 206, produce those for in-camera inspection. I'm going to take a look at it and decide whether they should be produced or whether they contain legitimate attorney-client privilege. This is done all the time. And I will tell you, the way in which, as a lawyer, you discover that somebody has been spoliating evidence, right, destroying documents, is because when you ask the same question of multiple witnesses, different documents will show up on one person's privilege logger production, but not on another.
Yeah.
Right. And you have your team of associates go through and pick out, and you're like, Melissa Carone produced an email from herself to Rudy Giuliani on January 3rd, or let's say on December 15th. But Rudy Giuliani did not produce that same email as. Yeah. Under the same request.
So what you're saying is not to give advice on how to be unethical, but if you're going to spoliate together. Is that what you're saying? You spoliate the
family,
as a team.
Yeah. The family that spoliates together.
The conspirators who spoliate together stay together.
No, that's right. And so what I am saying is that as a lawyer, you know the ways in which you deal with rogue witnesses that might destroy documents. And if you wanted to highlight this person on the litigation hold letter to Sidney Powell or to Rudy Giuliani or both to say you are also directed to instruct all of your witnesses and anyone else under your control to preserve all evidence, that would have been fine. This was done equal parts PR stunt, which you can tell from the language, and equal parts as an effort to come down and
vindictiveness and, a little revenge. Yeah.
And deterrence, right? You poked the bear. And in this case, right, the bear is a multi-billion dollar multinational corporation with a ton of resources, and bears don't like getting poked. I get that, but I do think like we should. I mean, it rubbed me the wrong way to see folks cheerleading this letter because this was. I don't want to say it's an abuse. It's not. It's not inappropriate. Okay, it feels a little wrong to me. Right. It feels like.
So it feels a little bullying, maybe.
Yeah, and look. 99 times out of 100, when the situation is reversed, regardless of the apportionment of fault involved, I don't want to be on the side of, you know, big corporation using legal process to intimidate an individual, and particularly an individual that you don't intend to sue, right? An individual who is a witness to the process, who may or may not be able to afford counsel on her own. Now, look, I get it. This is a super easy target. And yeah, this person is probably going to go get the full Fox News treatment. And, you know, and when that happens, I'll be with you. You know, I mean, I've called her Drunky McDrunkerson in this, right? Like, it's not like I'm really, you know, stridently arguing, you know, pro Melissa Carone here. it is that this felt a little off to me. And I also thought it was a good opportunity to explain what litigation hold letters are and kind of do that sort of classic OA deep dive. Because a lot of people were like, well, why are they sending this letter anyway? And the answer is it is to preserve documents for litigation so that you may uncover them in discovery. And with that in mind, when you go back and read this, to tell me that you think that's really what they want to do.
Yeah. Right? No, I agree with you that this is, you know, I think we can all agree here that this is a little vindictive, a little revengey, a little, you know, you're trying to spread disinformation about our company. But I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure I like vehemently disagree with you or anything, but I think if I worked for this company or something and I was like, okay, we got some person who's just making up stuff about conspiracy about what we do and whatever, like, all right, maybe we're not going to sue this person out of existence or something, but let's threaten her a little bit to get her to stop spreading these lies about us. I don't know. I don't see it as like that bad, but I see your points. I don't know.
I hear you, and I think you hear sort of where I've come down. Yeah. And to me, it's more about, are we ever going to live in a country in which norms matter again? Mm. and if we are, you know,
But can we all agree that they should sue the pants off of? Well, no, I want Rudy Giuliani's pants on. But sue the pants and hair dye onto Rudy Giuliani. Can they?
Yes, we agree. 100%. Absolutely.
Send as many litigation hold letters to them as possible.
They should be seeking injunctive relief, requiring him to shut the hell up. They should absolutely it's
get
part
him disbarred.
Of. Yeah. It is part of the I view this as sort of a follow on story to when we first talked about how Dominion was planning to bring defamation lawsuits. Like, yeah, that's a really good way to stop people from spreading baseless conspiracy theories against you. That is, find rich and powerful people with money and sue them and take away their money if they don't stop. And everything that Dominion has done with respect to those lawsuits has been textbook, right? Like, that's mm-hmm. why you issue the cease and desist letter. You say, hey, this strongly worded crunch wrap is more than just, you know, tasty cheese and ground beef inside, right? Like, this is setting up so that you now know the truth. And if you continue to repeat falsehoods when you know the truth, we have a slam dunk case of defamation against you. And that's why, you know, we talked about it, Fox News sent Lou Dobbs on the air to debunk Lou Dobbs in a glorious moment. Like, that worked. And this is a perfect example of where, you know, in that area, you know, you can use the inequalities in our civil system for the cause of good, right? Like, to be able to say, all right, stop saying things that are patently not true. Coupled with this, right? I certainly wish that we had more robust, we've talked about this before, it's going to have to be a topic of a future deep dive, but that we had more robust anti-slap laws in the 50 states, right? Like, you live in California that has a fantastic and robust anti-slap law. That, you know, it's why our friends Ono, Ross, and Kerry base their show and the LLC that produces it out of California, because they get accused of libeling people all the time, of defaming them. And their answer is almost always like, nope, we're engaged in legitimate journalistic reporting. And,
also, they live in California, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, but we saw that, right, with the Trump lawsuit selectively, you know, trying to sue one TV station in Wisconsin because Wisconsin mm-hmm. doesn't have good anti-slap laws.
Yeah, we all need this. Can we do a federal anti-slap? I mean, it's low on the agenda of all the things we need to get done, but is that something that should exist or no?
So the problem is that one of the things that's really, I would love to see that, but I don't think we could. And one of the reasons that I think we couldn't is because the most effective anti-slap laws alter the state's rules of civil procedure to say, here's an early way you can seek dismissal, get the case removed before discovery, and get your money, right? Get all of your attorney's fees paid. And
that's interesting. I take your word for that, and that makes sense. But it's funny that a right that's enshrined in the First Amendment, you know, is something that, like, well, a federal law to protect that wouldn't really work just based on the quirks of how this plays out. It's kind of interesting.
That's an awesome point. So let's put a pin in that and let's do a slap law episode.
All right. Well, what a nice signature deep dive from 1P Andrew Torres. It's nice to be back to the old way.
Oh, man.
And
there's so much more.
I'm going to go off and write some litigation hold letters to people. Is that cool? Can I do that?
Yeah.
Do I have to be a lawyer?
Can I write a
litigation hold letter about the bar exam that you're giving me? In fact, I think I'm going to. Can I get, okay, Morgan, if you're listening, I need to issue a litigation hold letter to Andrew about all his documents regarding the bar exam we're now using and the porking of the streak and the not porking of the streak. So get back to me on that, Morgan. So shoot me an email. Thanks.
You know she'll do it, too.
And thank you!
And now it's time to thank our Hall of Famers, our all-time greats over at patreon.com/law. I'll start us off. Thank you to former Federal Reserve attorney. Interesting. Jacob Daniel Murphy, Sparkle Donkey Tequila, the world's best tequila in the world, sparkledonkey.com. Rest in peace, Brandon Bernard. We must abolish the death penalty. Yeah, agreed. Next week on Lot Awful Movies is the trial of the Chicago 7. I agree with the previous patron, Noctelfa Root Creeper. The Coterie, expert Salesforce implementations and custom app development. Activate digital transformation at www.thecoterie.io. Justice for Beer, check out Budget Botanist on Fiverr for all your virtual houseplant needs. Listening for years, still can't come up with something clever. Nevin Dudas' cow, Chelsea Olsen, Wesley Glenn Brock, becoming a patron to get 5 episodes a week, now to catch up on months of backlog. New book, The Greatest Gift of All, A Logical Path from Religion to Humanism by Mark McLean, out December 30th. Oh, that means it's already out now. Congrats. Eli, you have my express permission to say whatever you want about Mitch McConnell. Well, that doesn't do Eli a lot of good, if I say it. At Casa Agria is the best brewery. At Emperor's Brewery is a close second. Bradford Thomas thinks Joe looks better in a Leaf jersey. Gosh, I'm so bummed about that. Really sad to lose Joe Thornton. Great Dooku Tree, a thorny tourney of torn and tawny tourniquet attorneys, each more torn and tawny than the last. Thomas Gleeberg, Big Docket Energy. Writ of Mandalorian is granted when there is no discretion. This is the way. My name is Mary Perez, and I'm a fan of both the Boston Celtics and Boston Bruins, even though I grew up in New Jersey. Ugh. A sentient mass of spiders got a new job in the oil industry. Please vote blue and make me lose my job for real. Buddy freaking Geyerson. One is first, but two is a close second. Idea for a screenplay, Air Bud, man's best amicus. Hadron, sorry for not changing my Patreon name. 1L Finals are a clown horn. 1L Finals are a clown horn. Two fabulous lesbians. Two fabulous lesbians, TM. Your move, fabulous lesbians. We got a good patron battle going on here. I like it. William Drew Collins, Bob Newhouse, Sassy Italy Tours is asking you to donate to the Raphael Sassy Memorial Fund, RaphaelSassyMemorialFund.org. Greg Kreimer, oh, no associate of this firm has ever porked the streak. Oh, that's great. I love that one. Biden-Harris, has ever porked the streak. Biden-Harris 2020, now to win Georgia runoffs. Jennifer Chikowski, doing this while drunk. Hey, Hans Royal, you're live on the air with opening arguments. Simple Country Hyper Chicken, My Call, An Old, Mad, Blind, Despised, Dying King. That Dickens always with the compliments. A cursory evaluation of a Republican's capability indicates a distinct tactical deficiency. Say it with me, amicus. I'm not even a tortfeasor and I'm kicking your ass. Support secular construction. There's no rule against faithless erectors. Angry Macface. Sorry, Andrew. Uncle Frank is too far gone. If something should go wrong, let's not get the law involved. One hand washes the other. Center of Black Trans Sex Workers. The Books That Burn podcast. Reviewing fictional depictions of trauma since 2019. Hey, you up. I just got a writ of habeas corpus because I need that body. some good ones today. The one, the only... They who shall never be dethroned, Crazy Corgi. And that's two different patrons, by the way. So nice teamwork there. If everyone listened at speed 1.3, they might understand long legal explanations without exceeding their attention span. Maybe. Uzi Rudy's Legal Ruse movie was a doozy. Yeah. Change my Patreon name so that I don't jump every time you read it. Murray Gregerson, this is taking too long. I'm going to skip a few. I move for a bad court thingy. I became a patron because this is the best podcast ever. Oh, thank you. Congratulations to the NFC West champion Seattle Seahawks. Yeah, that's a good team. Jordan Jai Jessamine in Illinois. We pronounce it Illinois. Move, Mitch. Get out the way. Get out the way, Mitch. Get out the way. Dash Infinity, Dash Infinity. Rejoining top tier next week. Expect a joke about an adjacent patron name. Nice. Clever Monkey Dicta Porker. Brent Medling. Jake. Donate to Georgia Runoff. Or Wright Said Fred will come back. We did. Christopher Brown. Philly Live Show 2022. I bring the scotch and the cheesesteaks. Lawfulcopter says Andrew and Thomas, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for everything you guys do. The wheels of justice turn faster than the speed I changed my Patreon name. Hello, my name is Porky McPorking Trinshire, with a leg for an arm and an arm for a leg. Okay. There's a goat. Why is there a goat? Andrew Seidel's butt is into buttress stuff. Zirkle, Robert M., Odin the Law Dog, Josh Hoku, Stormy Decisis, Polly Hernandez. Andrew's real favorite book is Thatcher in the Rye, The Life and Times of the UK's Iron Lady. Check out The Ring Runner and Brigador on Steam, two slightly mad indie labors of love that do not deserve their obscurity. KTEL presents the 1460 best bittersweet yodel ballads, Emily Rainbow Spence, and Not That Chris Wallace. Whew, your turn, Andrew.
Whew. All right. Well, thank you to Alfred Wallace. GiveToModestNeeds.org. GiveToModestNeeds.org. It's okay, Thomas. I got it wrong, too. Jason Copas. Hotspear suggests Biden pardon a nonviolent drug offender every day until Republicans agree to limit president's pardoning power. Those are both great ideas. 2020 can bite my shiny metal ass. I'm even going to say ass here. Optimism is overrated. 8 == D. And that is every syllable of that is written out. I love that. Footnote 5. The true Conrad Michaels, Nate Drex, Darth Mandy Pants, what look like ASCII boobs, which I'm totally down for. No idea what emotion in lemonade is, but it sounds delicious. 13th century Saxony gravel truck lawyer. I am the bad things that happen in Philadelphia. Stay gritty. Diogenes the Cynic was right. Jennifer Cratch. Jeez, who'd want to pork our streak, eh, you tortfeasor? Unionized Brooklyn friends. Puddles the Clown sings sad yodel songs. That just makes me laugh. CivilPoliticsRadio.com, Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Valley Free Radio. Good job on the voting for the Joe Biden. Please continue with the hand washing. Stephen Balticate Sandoval. John Bilderbeck. I see everything twice. Warning Yossarian about extra white space. Nice. Philip Kaiser, Andrea the Arbitrary and Capricious. Can I even get back to criticizing religious influence on our democracy yet? Yes, you can. By Dawn 2020, I hope you worked your ass off for the Georgia Senate race. Da-dum-bump. Absion, Payton Strumpet, Trambolus. Thank God she finally changed her stupid Patreon name. Thomas's load-bearing cats. Jonathan, Trump wanted four seasons, got Doubletree. I had to stand up and Google Doubletree, but now I get it and can sit back down. Sitting down because, like Texas, I lack standing. That's some excellent coordination there, you three. Milo Meadsong Esquire, halfling bard and attorney at law. Stop. Ask a question a karaoke legend would ask. Join your labor union. Together we bargain. Alone we beg. Hold your toot. Don't pollute. Our doula borrowed some money because she's going through a midwife crisis. James K. Therese Chan, doctor at night, homeschooling our kids during the day. Pretty sure my wife's a superhero. Chad T. Anonymous, Biden should name everyone Trump fires between the election and inauguration to his transition team. WordOrigins.org, your source for legal terms from 13th century Saxony. In the end, it was more like Iran-Contra than Watergate. RIP, notorious RBG. Video killed the Patreon pun. Joe Boo's Rum, your Yodel Mountain Fantasy Football League champions. Yeah, on a technicality. I mean, if I hadn't dropped out, Joe Boo wouldn't have made the playoffs because I had five players out with COVID on like week 13. And I lost by like a point and a half. Yeah, I'm getting Sidney Powell on that case right away. Anyway, they said I could be anything, so I became two fabulous lesbians. Derek. Trump pardoned three turkeys this week. This is they're not a month old, but congrats, Corin Cobb and Michael Flynn. Terrified will be pecked to death by lame ducks. A string of unpronounceable characters. We're on to thedork.com. I still haven't gone there yet. Have you? Anyway. The coronavirus apocalypse is making me too depressed to think of anything clever this week. Adam Costa, J. Alden Walt, Malika Chandler, Tricicular Manslaughter, Buttercup's Legal Services, welcome back. Soggy Pants, Matthew Vernon, I just had COVID and losing the Seattle live show is still the worst part of 2020. Covidius Albion, adopt a homeless pet and oppose declawing and ear docking. De jure belli et pacis at last, baby. Heather L., Jeremiah's Fancy Microwave Emporium, Ian and Ally, Danny Rosari, Eli Bosnick, David in Brooklyn, Teresa Gomez. Wow, no name from Teresa Gomez, huh? Sam Danow, Mitchell, no commute, so behind on podcasts. Trump pardoned Manafort for my birthday. Can I return it? Natasha Crunchwrap wants you to support the Justice Policy Institute. I agree with that 100%. Sam Buck, and of course, our all-time great, he who shall never be dethroned, but keep trying anyway, Conrad Michaels.
Oh, no associate of this firm has ever failed the bar exam.
No kidding.
All right, it is time for T3BE, not ever to pork the streak because Andrew is cheating somehow and I'm going to get my hands on all the documents. T3BE time. Have I porked the streak? Let's find out.
Yeah. So this was a factory that began making a new type of sturdier plastic. Once they started producing the plastic, lots of people in town started getting sick and was complaining about the effluent that was being released in gaseous form in the neighborhood. And then a person, a citizen of the town, sued the factory for public nuisance. The question was, will they recover? You immediately eliminated the no answers, which I want to tell you, really good elimination.
I have no hope anymore. Cool. So which, yeah. So I didn't get it wrong that way.
Yeah. So absolutely, this is a case of public nuisance. The question is, what's the justification? And I will not hold you in suspense. I was actually typing up the Thomas has porked the streak, despite your pessimism, because the analysis you gave as to why B was the correct answer was 100% correct. And then you were just like, ah, F it. I'm going to pick A at the last minute. I was so sad for you. It's B, in case you haven't figured that out. And the reason is that A is if the use or enjoyment of the citizen's property has been unreasonably interfered with. That's the standard for a private nuisance. But I thought perhaps you would...
Public nuisance, yeah.
Right over, allied over that, because the harm that the citizen is complaining about here is not, you know, use or enjoyment of his property, but is I'm sick, right? I'm breathing these toxic pollutants.
Well,
right?
I would assume that's part of, like, if my property includes my house, that I can't really use it if I'm breathing in toxic fumes.
But you could construct that. But in any event, that is the test for whether somebody can bring.
Okay, so what's the part where it has to be unique to those suffered by the rest of the town?
Right. So a public nuisance, right, is when the defendant engages in an activity that unreasonably interferes with the health, safety, or morals of a community. And yes, that dates back to 13th century Saxony. But here's the thing. Ordinarily, right, it's inherent in the word public, and you even said this while you were working through it. So ordinarily, a public nuisance claim is brought by the municipality, right? It says, right, you came in here with your whorehouse, you unreasonably interfered with the morals of our community. These are real cases, by the way.
Yeah.
and so we want you to evict you and confiscate the whorehouse.
But if I also got gonorrhea, then I have suffered in it.
Then
damage or injury
that is
unique.
That is 100% correct. And again, real case. Right. So
not my gonorrhea, but
But in other words, courts will ask as a standing issue, why is Thomas Smith bringing this lawsuit and not the town of, you know, no whorehouses, California? And the answer to that is, if you have suffered damages or harm that are unique to those in the rest of the community, then you get to bring the public nuisance lawsuit. And that was the formulation in B. That's why it's B. I thought you were right there.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, again, those were all thoughts I had, but I'm not a lawyer. So I can think like, well, this might be it, but there's nothing magically in my brain that says, yep, you've arrived at the right conclusion. Stop there. So, yeah, because I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah, and the only thing I would say is when you decide on an answer, like maybe go back and go, what is the relationship between this answer, if it's a torts question, right? Like between this answer and the wrong that was suffered here, right? Or if it's a constitutional law violation, like just look for that tightness of fit. Because here, I think if you'd gone the other way, right, if you'd started with A and you'd have been like, well, that seems like it's all the elements. And then at the end, you'd have been like, oh, but wait a minute, like, this isn't about using your property. This is about getting sick. So,
still don't see the difference between those two things. So, yeah, that would be the problem. How is that not about using your property if you're getting sick on your property? Like, I guess legally speaking, that just means someone has to be doing something else that doesn't involve your health or something?
It's interesting that seems to be a kind of property injury to you, because the law basically had to arrive at that status, sort of a common law, over multiple centuries, right? So for example, we have the doctrine of constructive eviction, right? So if your landlord fails to maintain the heat during the winter and it's 40 degrees Fahrenheit in your you can say, like, well, effectively you've kicked me out of my property because...
Yeah, I mean, I picture if there's a cloud of toxic smoke over my... And I don't know if this person lives on a farm or, you know, whatever. Like, if there's a cloud of toxic gas over my... the area that I own, which I would think of as property, that seems like you're interfering with using my property. But I guess... So that's not right?
So, but now think about... Let's calibrate it downward, right? Let's say it becomes a constructive... analogous to constructive eviction. It becomes a property injury if you can't live in the house anymore because it's so severe. But like, think about the wildfires in California that you suffered last year, earlier this year, right? Where you're like, okay, I'm not leaving my house because it's even worse outside, but like, it's pretty bad inside.
It was.
Right? So I know. Right. So in other words, I don't think you would want it to be tied to a use of the property standard, right? Because I could come back and say, oh, are you still able to live at your house? All right, then fine. What are you complaining about? I think you want it to be tied to a specific injury to health, because there you can say, like, right, but I'm coughing all the time, right? Like, I'm more miserable. I'm still using my property in the same way, but I'm more miserable while I'm doing it.
Yeah, I mean, the language is unreasonably interfered with, you know, it seems like interfered with isn't like a language of, you know, it's made it impossible for you to even occupy your house. It does interfered with sound like something. So, yeah, I guess what I'm saying is, like, I get that to you that's obvious, but I don't, and maybe, you know, we're two in a row here where it's like, or two or more, where I'm close, but if there's something I knew, I would have been able to get it. I'm not a lawyer, so it's hard.
Well, I'm still very proud of the way that you're working through the questions.
Well, I like that you will always believe in me, even though I will never pork the streak, and you found a test to F with me and expect a hold letter from my attorney.
Okay.
Morgan.
Wrong! Hide my head, I wanna drown my sorrow. No tomorrow, no tomorrow.
You lose!
All right, Andrew, hop in the time machine and tell us who porked my streak without me.
Well, Thomas, this week's winner is Emmett Witkowski Eldred on Twitter, who writes, I was so excited that SiriusPod would pork the streak in T3BE, but he veered off to A at the last second. It's B. A private individual can only recover for public nuisance if she suffers from a particularized injury. Answer A was the standard for private nuisance. Exactly right. Great little graphic to go with it. Everyone, give Emmett a follow on Twitter. You can follow them at EmmettEldred at Emmett Eldred, and congratulations on being this week's winner.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone. And I will go back to constant heart attacks about the Georgia elections, and hopefully I can recover in time for Friday's show.
I move for a bad court thingy.
You mean a mistrial?
Yeah, that's why you're the judge and I'm the law talking guy.
This has been Opening Arguments with Andrew and Thomas. If you love the show and want to support future episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/law. If you can't support us financially, it will be a big help if you leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever podcast delivery vehicle you use. And be sure to tell all your friends about us. For questions, suggestions, and complaints, email us at openarguments@gmail.com. The show notes and links are on our website at www.openargs.com. Be sure to join the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/yodelmountain and follow us on Twitter at openargs. This podcast is a production of Opening Arguments Media, LLC, all rights reserved. It is produced with the assistance of transcriptionist Heather Loveridge, production assistant Ashley Smith, and additional contributions from Morgan Stringer and Deborah Smith. Special thanks to Teresa Gomez, who runs our live shows and heads up the OA Wiki. Follow at OA Wiki on Twitter. Additional thanks to the moderators of the Opening Arguments Facebook community, Emily Waters, Alicia Cook, Eric Brewer, Natalie Newell, Brian Ziegenhagen, and Teresa. And finally, thanks to Thomas Smith, who edits the show and created the fabulous theme music, which was used with permission.